Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to this week's Iowa Clinic Men's Center podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. We've got Jeff Woody with me, IAMen'sCenter.com. First of all, let's pay our bills here. Jeff, you got a if you need your physical, I got a guy for you.
I know. I'm probably going to be setting up an appointment sometime next week
with Doc Nicholson.
Probably with the appointment process.
Super easy.
Yeah, I just haven't done it because I'm lazy.
You just give them a call, and I mean, usually they can work you right in the next couple of days.
I need to do that.
Yeah, Doc Nicholson, that's the guy.
Okay.
He's a good dude. He'll talk football with you too.
So I need to block out like an hour and a half for the appointment.
Nah, 45 minutes
just for the football. Like the appointment itself would take 10-15 minutes. But football conversation.
The football fodder. He actually came out to Benchwarmers with us last year and watched some basketball. Good dude. You'll really like him. If there's any man who's going to be giving you a physical, this is the guy you want it to be.
All right.
Doc Nicholson at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. Also excited, I love our partnership with the Iowa Clinic. We're going to do, in the month of October, what's called a pink out, where Cyclone Fanatic, like the trim of our website, everything around our website is going to be pink in honor of the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, courtesy of the Iowa Clinic Women's Center. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be really neat. It's a good cause and something we can raise awareness for.
It's crazy how, like there's nothing that's quite as unified to one cause as baby pink, like the color pink that your daughter is probably swaddled in.
Yeah.
You see that color? You probably, even when you saw your daughter, you didn't see that color because you're just looking at your daughter's, beautiful little face. Yeah. But if you were to take it and just take a section of that pink, you wouldn't think baby girl, you'd think breast cancer.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeff.
How well it's been done to promote that one shade and that one color that you're always going to think breast cancer. I don't know, like the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, something like that, where it's so ubiquitous and it's so well done that the cause is now not necessarily easy to do, but the groundwork is laid so well. So I don't know. It's really good job by whomever decided to make the month of October pink. And then now it's just a year round thing where if you see pink, you're automatically assuming breast cancer.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And then, you think of the, how they do it with the college basketball coaches versus cancer and the tennis
with
shoes.
Tennis shoes, yeah.
There's a lot of cool stuff. I'm glad we will be able to be a part of it this year with the Iowa Clinic. All right, let's go to Iowa State and Toledo. I don't know, Jeff, how much – here's the deal. When it comes to fan reaction, I feel like I am immersed in it. I take the brunt of it a lot of times.
Immediately. Yeah, you take it immediately.
Between Twitter, Cyclone Fanatic, and then the post-game call-in show, I often joke like I'm a psychologist for the Cyclone Nation, which is not easy in the sport of football. So, admittedly, when it comes to how the fans are after games, I think I'm a little sensitive to it because I see so much of it so quickly. And in my honest opinion, I think this is pretty bad. I mean, this is as down as I've seen the fan base since the Chizik times, to be honest with you. This is worse than the last couple of years. So I guess my question, what's your reaction to the reaction, Ben?
It's an odd feeling because I can totally understand where it's coming from, because you should not lose that game. You shouldn't have lost that game. You outplayed that team, which is a team in the MAC that you should have beaten. If they're from the MAC, it does not matter. You should beat them every time.
Well, and then you add to it, I mean, they looked like the better team. It's not like Toledo was throwing them around.
Yeah, no, they looked like the better team. They ran the ball. They finally ran the ball. They did the things that everybody knew they should do. And then somehow fouled it up, literally, again, like no pun intended. Like they fouled it up by 14 penalties. And somehow in each situation found a way to get kicked in the stones or shoot their own foot off or every possible way that you could stall a drive or every possible way that you could give someone another chance happened. So I understand the frustration. The other thing, like the thing that if you take a step back though, is how fine a line 3-0 is from at this point.
Yeah.
Because say, let's go back to the Iowa game. In the Iowa game, we are up 7 points. Iowa is driving. Riley McCarron, or excuse me, Krieger Coble, the tight end, catches a pass out of the backfield. He wasn't covered. He runs down the sideline. He fumbles. That ball pops up. Say Kamari Cotton-Moya gets on it instead of Riley McCarron, who falls into the end zone. Say that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Say Kamari Cotton-Moya gets that. Iowa had then stalled on two consecutive drives. Iowa State has a 7-point lead. There's confidence swing. Even if they get it and turn around and punt, then Iowa has to turn around and drive another touchdown, or make another touchdown drive to score. And then in order for them to make a, or to get back in this game, they would have to score another time.
Mm-hmm.
It gives your defense time to be on the sidelines. That game is totally different. If the ball, literally that odd-shaped ball, if it bounces back the other way, an Iowa State player recovers it. But so it so happens that it goes up in the air and Riley McCarron gets it. Now let's go to Toledo. Cole Netton, if, again, think of like how fine this line is. The physics of kicking a football are insane. You're taking a foot, which if you look at your foot right now, it is not a flat surface.
Mm-hmm.
The side of a football that you're kicking is a definitely a round surface. So if he is 1 inch on the ball to his left and it goes through the uprights, Iowa State's 2-1, bar nothing from the Iowa game.
Mm-hmm.
Say that ball bounces the other way and Cole makes the kick. You're 3-0. There is nothing right now. If they're 3-0, if two plays go the other way, which are just mathematical physics, like little tiny slight differences, they go the other way, 3-0, and everybody is thrilled because you're going 3-0 into Kansas. But that's not happened. It is both of those things seem to keep going wrong. And for me, I understand, like, again, my favorite phrase is long answer to short question, is it, to come back to all of this, these kicks to the stones that have been going on, it's hard to keep confidence in that same vein. It's hard to keep the upbeat attitude in that. So it's, I don't know, it's a very complex situation for me with the fan base because I can see both sides.
Yeah, yeah. And it's different for you because you have a personal relationship with Paul Rhodes.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys.
And Sam
that,
Richardson.
A lot of guys on that yeah. team. Yeah. I guess I'm kind of to the point where I'm – Bloom and I were talking about this last night. He came over and our families had dinner together, and we do that often.
Well, you live like not correct. Even a minute apart.
Yeah, we're pretty much – I mean, I'm married to my wife, but then it's pretty much Bloom.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm comfortable with admitting that. I guess, man, like, I just – listen, I don't – nobody's going to get fired right now. And
nor should they.
Yeah, but that's what, you know, this instant gratification society we live in, it's like, fire him now. And listen, I'm not saying that Paul Rhodes should have his job at the end of the year. I don't know. But I'm a guy who wants to wait and see. That's all I want. Like he's not going to get fired right now. Maybe if you lose to Kansas, then you know it's a whole other conversation. But right now, it's the guy. He's the guy with the job. The one thing I have hope for that makes me want to watch the rest of the year. If this was last year's team, I wouldn't care about the rest of the year, Jeff. But this. Mm-hmm. When I watch these guys, they're clearly better.
Mm-hmm.
They have better players than they did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And even 2 years ago, specifically on defense, it's like, man, like that group can – I'm not going to kill the defense over the last – you know what I mean? And the
yeah.
offense, it's like the Toledo game, man, you just keep seeing glimpses and glimpses, but they're just not executing at the times where you need to put the ball in the end zone. Or
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like, to me, like if they go out and beat Kansas – Texas Tech isn't crazy. Listen, and I'm not trying to, like, sell hope. I know things are bad right now. I get it. But, man, I just kind of want to watch. I just kind of want to wait and see what happens before I jump off of a cliff.
And I don't remember who was on the radio when they were talking. I think it actually might have been Bloom. And everybody said, like, Toledo's a must-win game. And the chances of getting to a bowl now are slim. It's not that they're none, because like you said, there's the Big 12 is not as good this year.
I don't think so either.
As they have been in years past, because TCU is legit because Trevon Boykin can keep anybody in any game, and that offense is going to hang 55 on the best defense. Two, Baylor is a...
They've been underwhelming.
Very unimpressive so far. Oklahoma is absolutely... Watch out for Oklahoma.
I think they're the best team in the league.
I think so, too. They're the most complete. And then Oklahoma State's good, but I don't trust a Mike Gundy team to continually stay up for every game. But outside of those probably four, every other game is winnable. Texas, Texas Tech, Kansas, Kansas State, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. All of those games are winnable. There's not, there's no, none of those that I go, all right, crap, chalk that one up as a loss. Like, you go down to, even though Baylor's down, you go down to Waco, good luck beating Baylor in Waco. You're Alabama, yeah, good luck beating Baylor in Waco.
And the statistics prove it. I mean, how good they've been there for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Nobody's winning down there.
No. Nope. Even, you know, the best teams didn't go down there to win. So the reason why it was funny that people were calling this, and I think I was one of them who was calling last week a must win, is that it's the world is still spinning and the sky is still blue and there's still grass on the ground. So it may have been a must win, but this week is more must than that must win. This game against Kansas is not the bye week because you can't win the bye week.
Can't lose it either. Thank
God. Can't lose it. in my opinion, so the Toledo game, the way in which that game was lost and the way in which the whole game was played provides a really interesting dynamic because, again, in the Iowa game, you play well in the first half, pretty poorly in the second half. Then you have to come back and respond somehow. Outside of the penalties, they did respond.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, the defense gets the punt blocked, which that is 100% on Colin Downing.
Was it really?
Yes. So the guy that blocked it, this is from Mayang. They didn't show a replay of the side camera because that was a very poor effort by ESPN's production crew.
All night long.
All night long.
It was a disaster.
Rocky is the worst color commentator I've heard in my life.
So I'm not alone in that stance.
Oh, my God. we can get to that in a second.
That guy... Oh.
They weren't even there.
Doesn't it infuriate you?
They weren't there.
Is a guy who is in the business.
I do color commentary. Yeah,
doesn't it just make you crazy that guys like that are on national television?
He's got a job with ESPN calling national college football games.
I get it, man. Like, it, there's so much garbage out there. And you, like, it, you know what drives me nuts? And I'll stick up for my husband again. Bloom. Bloom is more talented at play-by-play, I would say, than 70% of the guys you watch on television.
Yes, he is.
And that is not hyperbolic. It drives me insane. But go ahead. Sorry, I just had to get that off of my chest.
So, but I didn't get to see like the actual like side camera of it, but the punt gets blocked. Where that came from in a spread punt is you only have six guys that can block anyone. Anyone specifically assigned to them on the front line. So the defense has 11. One goes back to be a returner. So there's 10 guys in line of scrimmage. If they rush, then you have six. You can take away six with blocking on the front line. So, you know, the wing, the tackle, the guard on the left side, the wing, the tackle, and the guard on the right side. There are six. And then the three guys, the shield, take away the three in the middle, the three guys that are going to rush up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's six plus three is nine. So there's one guy that's coming free regardless of wherever they set him up. And if they overload one side, the protection has to switch, and you still are going to end up with an overload. Like, there's not enough people to block all of them there. So if you see rush as a punter, and this is one of my best friends at Iowa State was Kirby. And, you know, you talk about this with Kirby. If they're going to rush and you see that there's going to be a guy unblocked, it's like a quarterback with a blitz. You got to get it off.
Yeah, get rid of it.
You take one step and you kick the ball. And I think, I mean, he's still a young player. He's a sophomore. I don't know that if they show the side angle and somebody missed the block, then that's not 100% his fault. And that's not his fault very much at all then, because he is assuming that the guy is picked up.
Mm-hmm.
So granted, but whatever. So they get that punt block. The defense ends up getting a stop on the 1 yard line. So,
which was incredible.
Which is incredible. Levi played out of his mind on that drive. So you go from the Iowa game where you get that stagnation the second half and they respond, but they have so many things that just keep happening that they lose. But for the majority of it, they played well. So going into Kansas, this is, it's really interesting to see, again, what comes out of this, because 2-2, granted, the first five you expected to have a winning record, which is still possible. You can still finish 3-2 in the first five, theoretically.
Which is where I had them.
Mm-hmm. Before. It's just a different route to get there.
Yeah, I mean, I had them losing to Toledo at the beginning of the year, but I had them beating Iowa.
Yeah. So, say you get to this next game against Kansas. If they win this next game, which they absolutely must do in order to salvage the confidence for the rest of the season, but say they beat Kansas, then they go down to Lubbock, get one against Texas Tech because they've got confidence now from beating up on Kansas. You're 3-2. Granted, your next few games are against TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma State, but if you're 3-2 coming into that, then yeah. 3-5 would be the record that they end up having. Wouldn't that be right? 3-5 coming out of, if they don't steal TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma State at home.
Yeah.
Which Oklahoma State winning, if Iowa State were to, in this point, beat Oklahoma State at home, I would not be the least bit surprised. Because, like
yeah,
I said,
well,
I don't
man,
trust,
you're down on Oklahoma State.
I don't trust Mike Gundy's teams whatsoever. How many times have Mike Gundy's teams been supposed to be successful and lost 2-3 games throughout the season that you go, what in the hell are you doing losing that game?
Mm-hmm. Especially on the road.
Especially on the road.
Yeah.
They don't play well on the road. They have a lot of times where they lapse, like last year. Iowa State should have beat Oklahoma State last year. They should have.
That was the game, just for our listeners, where Pollard made the comments about the officiating after the game.
And that was the one where there was that fourth down stop that should have been.
That was one of the more painful Cyclone reactions last year. I just remember, Jeff, because it was similar to Saturday night in the sense that it's like, damn it, guys. Like, if you just
do this one thing.
If you just do your job, like, you don't have to do anything. Yeah, I remember that game.
So
they were playing all those young guys.
Yeah. So now there is a chance down the road, but in order to save the confidence of this group, because as of right now, which is understandable, the fan base has been pissed off. But
for a while now, it's not like this just happened.
Right, and now that you lose a game like that against Toledo, the way they lost it, then people are just like, you know, God bless, why, you know, whatever. You hear all that as
this
a player.
This is where leaders step up, man.
It has to be. But you hear all that. If you end up losing to Kansas and you go 1-3 in games you were supposed to win, all of that turns down. The confidence for the rest of the season is going to be pretty much gone.
If they lose to Kansas, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yep. The confidence of the season is done, because then you got to go to Lubbock with low confidence. Which,
and I'll tell you what, they're better than we thought they would
be. And then you come home.
They're still garbage on defense.
True.
So, I mean, if the offense could get clicking versus Kansas and, you know, take that step forward, that's a positive. But, man, I said this on KXNO earlier this week. I would put TCU on upset alert Saturday.
Eh.
Hey, listen, I'm not calling the upset.
Yeah.
I'm saying I think Tech, TCU is like a 50-45.
Like Tech, Baylor was. Florence's senior year.
Yes.
It was like 61-50. Because
TCU's lost enough guys on defense where Kingsbury's, I think, good enough of an offensive mind where he's going to be able to get his. And I still think TCU wins the game. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of you guys have told me how awful it is playing in Lubbock.
To play contrarian, I heard you say that.
Yeah.
When Leach was there.
Oh, okay.
When Leach was there, like, probably guys like Arnaud and like Bruns were the guys that said that.
Yeah, Arnaud's one of them who hated playing there.
Yep.
But Sam's even told me that before. I know that he doesn't like it.
That place does not bother me at all.
Okay.
Because like when the places that are the hardest to play for me were in Oklahoma, playing at Memorial Stadium. Not because of how good they are, but like because just strictly looking at atmosphere.
Yep.
Playing there and playing in Waco are the hardest places to play.
Oklahoma and Waco?
Oklahoma, Norman and Waco.
Is that the old stadium in Waco?
I haven't played at the new one.
Okay.
But just basically out of the atmosphere that's there, it's the hardest to play against, because in Norman,
Boomer Sooner, Boomer Sooner.
God. If you hear that 50 times a game. But it's like Kinnick. But Kinnick's like a home game because of how it just the atmosphere. But whatever. Like in Norman, you're literally like the distance between the sideline and the wall of the stands is like maybe 5 yards from literally from the time you were to go out of bounds to the time you would hit a brick wall. So you have to fit your bench, all your equipment, all the sound equipment in that space, and they can hear everything they're saying. And they don't for the most part, like the people in Oklahoma that they get the front row seats are fine. Like they're not blasted out of their minds, but you get the occasional drunk guy that's going to heckle you the entire game from 4 feet behind you. Like he is just out of arm's reach.
And this is in,
is in Memorial Stadium in Norman.
Oh, okay.
And the fans are smart. They're loud, whatever. At Tech, they're probably 15 to 20 yards off the sidelines. So no matter how drunk, no matter how rowdy, no matter how pissed off the fans might be, you've got 10 to 12 yards between the back of the bench and the wall.
So why is it not that bad anymore?
Because they haven't been as good.
Okay.
And so the fans haven't had as much confidence. Like when Crabtree was there and they were like 10-1, I can imagine that would suck.
Yeah.
Because what I heard from Coberly, because Coberly's been down there, Mark Coberly, the athletic trainer. Yeah. He's been everywhere. He's been there for 22 years, I think.
Yeah.
And he said that the most heinously evil comments come from fans at Tech.
Yeah.
Like the kinds that are like, you know, the like, I'm going to rape your mother and poke her eyes out type stuff. Like that, just heinously evil comments come from fans at Tech. But from my experience, they are far enough back that you can just, you know, put your middle finger up and don't have to listen to them that much because they're so far away.
How sweet was that game when JB led you guys down there?
When Todd led down there? Jared Todd Barnett?
Yeah.
When the Todd took us...
41-7, I think, right?
Yeah.
Was that the final?
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the more refreshing games as an Iowa State fan that I can recall.
And they were ranked at that time.
Yeah, like nobody saw that coming.
And we put
you guys
it on them.
Killed them.
That was...
Duck Jake, Hollis.
Jake and AJ.
With the big run.
Jake and AJ. That was Tuberville's... last year? Was that his last year or was it second to last year?
I don't know. Was a weird departure.
That was the second to last year. And so Jake and AJ, they were playing, they were juniors at the time. And they had, I think, 12 yards rushing. And they had in the first half, they had 94 yards passing. Because... Jake and AJ were doing such a good job of getting the defense in the right, and Jacquez Washington too, were doing such a good job of just getting the defense in the right spot that quick passing game could not work. So the defense was just completely stifling, and then the offense, we ended up getting a few quick touchdowns because JB was different than what they'd seen, that all of a sudden you have a lead and Texas Tech had no idea what happened.
We should invite Jake down to the podcast.
We should. He's in Central Iowa.
Well, I know. We've been texting back and forth. He's been wanting to do some more media type stuff, too.
Yeah.
We should have him come down. That'd be fun.
Yeah, have Jake and I...
just let you guys just go at it. And I'll just
remember stories.
I'll just sit here and just hang out.
All right. I'm totally okay with that.
I don't even need to talk. It'd be better if I don't talk.
I think he starts a full-time job, but if we can get like a normal people job, maybe it was last week, or maybe it was... yeah, I think it was yesterday. I think he started his full-time job yesterday. Oh. We can coordinate a time, whether it's...
we'll have to do it at night then.
That's fine.
That's fine.
As long as it's not during the education hours that I have of night class
teaching. Well, see, you've got that, and then I've got dad hours.
That's true.
It's the only time I get to see my little girl, so it's tougher for me at night. But whatever. We'll figure it out.
We'll get something.
That would be a lot of fun, though.
We'll get something.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to Mike Warren. Your boy, he looked really good.
Podcast listeners, you can go back and listen to a podcast that we recorded in, like, was it June or July?
And your direct quote, you said he's going to be one of the best Iowa State's ever had.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yep.
It's like not a direct quote, but I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah. And I am still on that train. And Mike, the thing that you saw, that you guys got to see, that I got to see in practice a couple times... was how patient he is and the gear that he can switch, because he plays like Alexander Robinson, very similar styles. Mike's a little bit bigger, He's a little bit more. I'm not saying he's more physical, because A-Rob was physical as hell for being the size that he was, but A-Rob was only like a buck 90 at his best, which is crazy because you saw him and he'd look like a bodybuilder, but he's just a little, like his frame is small. But Mike is a thicker kid. He's got a great burst, but the great thing that he has, which is amazing for being 19, is the patience that he has in understanding where pressure is coming from. So what I mean by where pressure is coming from is, as a running back, understanding like the general theme of the play. So if they call, like the ones that he hit big on were pistol plays, were out of the pistol. The one that he ran up the sideline for 35 yards was a counter play. So on a counter play, he took one step left and then crossed and was running at a kind of an angle towards the right, where the right tackle's hand would have been in his stance. Mm-hmm. So you're running at that angle. So where the pressure is coming from on a play like that is that you're getting a counter. So your step to the left is going to either freeze the linebackers and secondary and defensive line where they are, or even shift them one step over. So all of the pressure on that play is coming from the left side when you're running. So you have to understand that the only way that I can come back left is if everything gets pushed by, because I have to understand like the theme of the play and where pressure is going to come from. So instead of doing that, he set his blocks up to the middle to hold the pressure there and then bounced outside, not trying to just take it right away. Because had he just taken the handoff and run straight to the sideline, it'd be a foot race and some corner, some safety is going to be as fast as you and catch you. But what he did is played and took 2 to 3 steps straight up the field at a good controlled pace to suck everyone in and hold them in place, but where the offensive line could kind of build this wall in front of him, and bounced outside from there. And when you're a running back, you don't need everyone to be blocked on every play if you're good enough at doing that. So like on that play, you got 35 yards because there are 5 linemen there. I think there were 6 or 7 guys in the box. So not everybody got blocked. But if you create enough of a mass and just crap that a linebacker has to get through, he's either got to run. Excuse me.
It's okay. It's early in the morning, Jeff. We're recording this early. You can belch.
But
nobody cares.
As he either has to run through a body or he has to run around the pile.
Yeah.
So Mike understands already the general theme of how to get plays done. Things that he has to improve on, ball security has to get better. And that can absolutely be taught. Like Tiki Barber is always the keynote example. Is he had, what, more fumbles in 2 years than any running back in history? And then all of a sudden, from that point on, when Tom Coughlin got to him and said, "You either get your stuff together, or we're going to cut you," and then all of a sudden, you would I think he fumbled maybe one time in like 6 years after that, and so that can be taught.
You said on KXNO the other night that he won't make the mistake again.
And when I tweeted like after the game, my takeaways that I had were: one, there were way too many mistakes in the Toledo game. Two, things are starting to click for Mike Warren. And three, the defense is legit. I think after 3 games, we can establish the fact that the defense is a legit unit. But people were like, I had probably 3 or 4 people on my Twitter feed were like, "Man, how can stuff be clicking with Mike Warren when he fumbles in the 15 going in?" It's because he's 19. Mm-hmm. You make a big play. You see the end. You can literally physically see the end zone, and there's no one between you and the end zone. You're doing everything you can to try and stay on your feet to get there. That's a 19-year-old kid's mentality. You're never going to see someone, you know, my example, because I'm a Broncos fan and running back nerd, is Terrell Davis. Terrell Davis is my example of running backs. Or say Marshall Faulk, or you're a Vikings fan, Adrian Peterson. You're not going to see someone like, well, Peterson's got fumbleitis. Don't use him as
AP,
an example.
AP, like, when you said the Tiki Barber, I'm like, he fumbled more than Peterson? That's what I was thinking.
So let's not use Peterson. He's got terrible ball security. But say, or DeMarco Murray. But anyway, so say you take a veteran senior running back. Look at he's not necessarily a senior, but Nick Chubb at Georgia.
Yep.
One, he doesn't get tackled. But when he does, and he's in the process of getting tackled, and you know that you're dead to rights, there are times when you just bite the bullet and know, I've made a 15-yard gain. Let's live to play another down. And you have to understand, like, you know, when to hold him, when to fold him mentality.
Yeah.
As a young kid, you see the end zone. You think, I got to get there. I can do it. I can make it there on this play. I got to everything I can. And all of a sudden, you go to, you know, put your hand down. Well, you put your hand down. You try and use your other arm for balance. That ball is automatically loose. A corner, literally, he just uppercutted the ball and knocked it out. So Now that he has done that and he's seen it on film, and that looks horrible on film, you see that. He's a smart kid. I've talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going, he's never going to make that mistake again, because he's going to understand, all right, I've already, if I look behind me, I'm 20 yards down the field. We're already on the 12. I'm rolling. They're tired. Let's do this again. Give me another carry and I'm going to score.
Yeah.
So understanding when to hold him, when to fold him, it comes in experience. So Mike understands what is hard to teach with understanding the general theme and the big macro level of what a running back is. The little things like taking extra steps and making better moves in the open field and holding onto the ball better, and those little things can be taught, but like the big concept stuff, which is really hard to learn, he already gets.
I thought that the run blocking was as good as I've seen in maybe years.
Daniel Burton has a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, Rhodes talked about that, but I mean, was that your analysis too, just him being back?
It helps that Burton's back. And Taisse is a mall. The dude can just move people out of the way. But a lot of times he just relies on like his physical strength to do it. And sometimes if you take a bad step, then you get in bad positions and a guy's going to shoot a gap. Like if anybody were to try that against DeMond Tucker and you take a bad step, you can't out muscle DeMond Tucker because his leverage and his technique are good. So Taisse would kind of get in trouble with that. Well, Oney, I believe he's at left guard when Burton's in, and Burton, who would be at right guard, are both really technically sound guards, so mm-hmm. they're going to take the right steps. When you take the right steps as a guard, you're basically plugging the holes in the wall that would be there. So what that also allows is that Jameson, the center, who is not a physically, he's not a physically commanding blocker. He's a kind of a technique guy. He's like 6'6", and Bruns has talked about it, where being a 6'6 center is kind of hard mm-hmm. because your leverage is difficult. So he's not a guy that you're really going to want to isolate on anyone. So what that allows Jameson to do is having two really technically sound guards is that he can focus more on making sure the front is identified properly, and he can keep his head up to look beyond the guy in front of him, because he knows that, say, they identify the guy on the left side and they're going to have a double team. He knows that the double team is going to come perfectly. He has no question about that.
Yeah.
So in his head, he can focus all his energy on making sure the blocking scheme is right. So having Burton in there is a big addition. Now he needs to stay healthy, and you know, I hopefully he does. But the run blocking is a lot better, and Burton makes that a lot more complete.
Was the run blocking better, or was it because they were playing Toledo?
Probably both.
Okay.
The Covington kid's legit.
That's the thing, though. Like, their D-line was, like, the strength of their team.
Yeah.
Going into the game.
That Covington kid's going to play on Sundays.
Yeah.
So, I think they had a nose tackle, too, that's probably going to be an all, like, first team all match.
Don't you think that Toledo team, though, like, if you put that team in the Big 12 this year?
Kareem Hunt runs for 1,200 yards.
Yeah, like, what? I mean, what are they, 7th? 8th?
In what?
In the Big 12 this year.
They're better in Kansas.
Just swap them and Iowa State. So, yeah, give Toledo Iowa State's schedule. Like, how good do you think they are?
They beat UNI.
Yep.
I think they compete but lose against Iowa.
Yep.
They would then play Iowa State, and we saw how that turned out. So yep. They would be 2-1. Then you go to play Kansas. They win that game.
Yep.
I think they have similar results against TCU, Baylor, Oklahoma State, but you compete against Texas and you have a solid running back in Kareem Hunt. As the year goes on, they may not have the great depth, but you have a great running back that's going to sustain you throughout the year. I mean, look at Ohio State. Look at Georgia. You have a great running back that sustains you throughout the year, because when guys get banged up, a running back can always keep going. So I say they finish, seventh, right around.
Yeah, okay.
Right around Texas Tech level.
Yeah.
Texas Tech, Iowa State-ish.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think, too. They'll probably... I think they'll go undefeated now. Maybe 11-1. I mean,
because their non-conference is done, because they didn't get it. Well, they're only playing 11 games.
Yeah.
Because Stony Brook.
Well, and those were the two. They already won the two games that
they're going to lose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless
Northern Illinois.
Unless Northern Illinois comes back at them, or there's like a Kent State who pulls it out of somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they have to go on road games, and road games in the MAC are fun. They're like high school rivalry games.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I'm not trying to make you guys feel better. I just, because if you've listened to me for the last 3 days or read anything, I mean, clearly I was as disgusted with the loss as you are, but I guess I'm kind of at the point where I'm ready to
What's the
somewhat
point?
Move on.
What's the point in being pissed off all the time? Like, you can understand that something's not good.
Yes.
But if you're just, like, constantly pissed off about how the... And, like, looking for them to lose.
Yeah.
What is the fun in watching football if you
it's
are
not fun.
Literally looking and saying, you know what? I'm going to be right. They're going to lose this game. They're going to lose it. See that? Sam threw an interception. Yep, they're going to lose this game. They missed a tackle. Like, there's no fun in that.
No, I agree.
If you're that Debbie Downer that, like, takes joy in being right about something going down, like, I don't want to sit next to you ever at any sporting event ever in my life.
You want to look at the Big 12 schedule
sure.
this week?
Sure.
We actually have some stuff, some conference games going on. Oklahoma State at Texas.
That's really interesting.
Texas kind of is legit now. I mean,
is it Jared or Gerard Hurd?
Gerard, I believe.
Gerard Hurd?
Yeah. They actually, I mean, I found their 1-point loss to Cal fairly encouraging.
They play, their offense, like, clicked. Their defense took a step back at home, but the offense, like, scored points, and Hurd provided a Jared Barnett-like dimension that they didn't have before with Swoops, because Swoops is a big kid, but he plays like more like a Cardale Jones, where he's big. He can run if he has to, or a Dante Culpepper type, or he can run if he has to, but it's really the big arm that he's got on him that everybody likes. And Hurd is more of an explosive runner that's going to do more with your offense. So Texas is it. They're better with Hurd than they are with Swoops, but they're still really inconsistent. So Oklahoma State, and again, I don't trust Oklahoma State as far as I can throw them. Like, they're supposed to win a bunch of games, and they're going to win a bunch of games, but they're also going to lose some games that they shouldn't lose. So if we're what's the line on this one? Like, Oklahoma State 3.5? Is that what it is?
Let me look the line up here. Because I want to say it was like 5.
Yeah, it's like 3.5, 5.5, something like that. With Oklahoma State being a favorite on the road. And DKR is probably 7-point spread. Or 7-point swing. Because DKR is quite the home field advantage, too. Because that's an NFL stadium.
That's a 2:30 kick. Give me a second. I should have had this up. My apologies. Jeez, sorry. You're like 6 phone calls right at once.
Mr. Popular.
Yeah. Who am I looking for? I'm looking for Texas and Oklahoma State. Here's some other Big 12 lines while I'm at it. TCU -7 at Texas Tech. So that's similar to what I thought.
Yep.
Oklahoma State -3.
Yeah, 3, 3.5.
Yep.
It's probably started higher, but the line came down because people started betting on Texas because they scored 44 against Cal at home, but Cal's defense is awful.
Is Cal's defense bad?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the Pac-12. I don't watch it.
Pac-12 is not – I mean, it's a pretty good football conference.
It's a fun offensive league.
Yeah.
It's a lot like the Big 12.
Yeah. It's more similar to the Big 12 than any other conference. But
I don't know. I kind of feel like – Oklahoma State has always had a hard time playing in Austin, too.
They've always had a hard time playing outside of Stillwater.
See, I kind of like Texas.
I'm not going to...
I don't know.
Take Texas outright because...
Take the 3?
No, I'm going to say it's a 7-point win for Oklahoma State. It's one of those games that the line is really set perfectly for betting because it's hard to pick one or the other. But I'm going to take... I would think... Oklahoma State with Mason Rudolph has enough to give Texas problems to create those issues. And the other thing that I like about this game for Oklahoma State is Emmanuel Ogba, the defensive tackle. He plays 3 technique. He's like 275, he's an undersized 3 tech. But what a 3 technique does is when you can create pressure. I talked about this. Who was it with? I don't remember. Anyway, the way you contain a running quarterback is you don't like the pocket that they're going to form with the offensive linemen. Like, tackles go back, guards fade back a little bit. The center pretty much stays where he is, and you get a U shape, mm-hmm. which is the pocket. The way running quarterbacks get out of that is defensive linemen get greedy and lose their lanes. So if a defensive end tries to go underneath a tackle and the offensive tackle buries him down, well, then no longer it's a U, it's like a J. So the quarterback runs out to that side, and then once he runs out into open space, linebackers, if they're playing man coverage, there's literally no one to account for the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So how you contain a running quarterback is discipline by your defensive ends, was talking about it with Iowa and Illinois State with Trey Roberson. And the way you contain a running quarterback is your defensive ends have to penetrate up the field to get at the level of the quarterback that don't allow him to run outside. And if he does run outside, he has to run backwards, which gives you time to get back there.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the defensive ends hold their level, the defensive tackles push the pocket back into his lap. And then there's no escape route because the pocket has been pushed in. It's not collapsing from the side. So Sammy's really actually pretty good at kind of slipping through those holes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can take someone and have the pocket pushed in on them, which is what Emmanuel Ogbah at a three technique, what he does really well is the defensive ends, if they stay disciplined, he can just push that pocket in, and then there's nowhere for a quarterback to go, so he can end up getting pretty good sack pressure. So I think Oklahoma State's defense, although I don't trust them that much on the road, I don't think he's heard as a good true passer. And Ogbah is going to create a lot of issue for that offense when they're in long down and distance situations, even that's first and 10 or second 11 or whatever it is, because he's going to prevent a lot of the scrambles because of that defense. So I'll take Oklahoma State, but I would not be surprised if Texas somehow manages to pull it together because they're in DKR.
TCU opened is a 13-point favorite over Tech. It's to 7 now.
Is it because of Cliff Kingsbury's tough talk with those dreamy eyes with Brett Bielema?
Listen, I don't think that Texas Tech will beat TCU, but I could see this being one of those Big 12 games that Big 10 fans make fun of.
It'll be fun to watch, though.
Yeah, I agree.
It'll be fun to watch.
I can't freaking wait.
Because Pat Mahomes and Trevon Boykin going back and forth.
Yeah.
Spider legs Mahomes.
Oh, it's going to be sweet.
But I am so excited. Like, that TCU offense is so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
Because Boykin's so good. And then I think Texas Tech runs the ball really well for being a spread team. So, yeah, this I wouldn't be surprised. It reminds me of the one they played at, I think, the Alamo Dome when Baylor with Nick Florence and Texas Tech back in the day when it was Graham Harrell. It wasn't Graham Harrell. Was it Graham Harrell?
What year?
2011.
That seems like a Graham Harrell.
I think it was Graham Harrell then.
Yeah.
It was maybe his senior year. Anyway.
All those system leech quarterbacks just kind of run together.
Yeah. But it was like 52-45. Something like that. And they were playing in the Alamo Dome, and it was just touchdowns after touchdowns after touchdowns, like 21-21. Like six,
oh, I remember six that minutes. Specific like, game you're talking
it's
about.
It's like 6 minutes to go in the first quarter, and it's 21 all.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be it would not put it past that game to be the same way. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with, like, why Chris is so, like, calling this for an upset alert, is TCU last year, there is an assistant coach on TCU's defensive staff that used to be on Tech's staff that when they played last year in Fort Worth, TCU dropped 82.
Yeah, that's what I was just
Texas
looking
Tech.
Up. 82-27
last year. I believe TCU kept their starters into the second half, even though they had like a 35-point lead. So it was a bit of poor sportsmanship by Patterson, but just rub it in their face. But Tech is going to be pissed off like a bunch of hornets.
Kingsbury's not the type of guy who's going to forget about that.
No. No. Imagine what that would be if, you know, Hoiberg ever had that. Like a loss to a Hoiberg team and, like, Bill Self didn't pull his starters or something like that. Say Kansas is up by, you know, 25 points with 3 minutes to go and you don't put your backups in and you keep trying to huck threes and you keep running fast-paced offense, how frustrated you would be with the other team. That's exactly what Texas Tech has with TCU.
Yeah, it is. How many TCU defensive starters are out?
Six? Is it six? Since the start of fall camp, TCU has lost six, I believe.
Well, is it seven now because of the most recent incident?
With the
beer. The Keystone.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Who in the hell assault someone for Keystone Light?
Hey, it's not Bush.
Keystone Light. Like, you can find change on the ground go to the store.
From what I understand, the guys were at a party, and the one dude popped off, and he got jacked. And then they didn't jack the guy to steal his Keystone Light. They jacked the guy because he was popping off. And then when they left the party, they're like, yeah, we're going to take this Keystone Light with us. This is our beer.
This is so dumb. It's
like the dumbest scandal ever.
That's funny because I think that I was going to lead Fanatics with it today. Well, and then like the stupidity of Gary Patterson to go and bring Baylor into it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, listen, I get that you and Baylor hate each other, but you did, good job. Nobody knew about this, and now you just made it a national story.
Yeah.
Well done.
And I mean, I get what he's saying. Like, because I don't – the report is what, like you said, the guy popped off, and they started a fight, and they're like, this is our beer. I'm taking this.
Yeah, it's my beer.
So – say that happened, but say what actually happened instead of that report is that people at the party come forward and they're like, no, that really isn't what happened. Like, that guy was really drunk and belligerent, and like, he was coming at those guys and like, yeah, slapping them in the head, and they just pushed him down, and like, yeah, they may have taken like not a kick, but like kind of like shoved him with his leg just to get some drunk idiot that's attacking you off of you. But you're a football player, so you're going to get charged. It's going to be public about that. Like, maybe that was actually the situation. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that was, but say that's what it is. Patterson, like, he's kind of sticking up for his guys, which I would appreciate, to say, you know, let's get all the facts first. But then he did take that one step. It was just a little bit too far.
I mean, it just, like, I don't mind smack talk between a couple of rivals. I just thought it was, I didn't think it, like, made him look good. You know what I mean? Like, it was this other level to an already but just a bad story for your program. And then that's what guys like me are wanting you to say, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we can write about it. I mean, I'm gonna lead off afternoon drive in Des Moines, Iowa with it today. You know what I mean? But if he doesn't mention Baylor, I'm not. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And that was like the ultimate equivalent of like, you know, your older brother gets like a minor in possession in high school or something like that, like getting MIP, and he's at a party drinking, and you get caught like going after curfew.
And yeah,
you're like, oh well, I'm after curfew, but he was drinking alcohol.
Yeah, he got the MIP. Not
yeah,
me.
he was the one, yeah, doing worse stuff.
Why are you mad at me?
It's super petty. It's so great.
I can't wait to watch those two teams play this
there
year.
There are like Sean Oakman is not like what I would consider like a really like high character dude that's gonna like take the high road in situations. Like if Sean Oakman gets a sack of Trevon Boykin. Can you imagine if he, like, push it? Like, he's going to push off Boykin, and, like, one of Boykin's tackles is just going to take, like, a huge cheap shot on Oakman, and it's just going to be a big brawl in the middle of the second quarter, and it's going to be awesome.
What day is that game? Is it on
Christmas?
It's the day after Thanksgiving, I think.
Really?
Christmas?
It's Christmas. College football Christmas.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Is it Black Friday?
It's Black Friday this year. 6:30 on Black Friday.
Hopefully it is not during the time of the Nebraska-Iowa game, because I may be doing it for Channel 5. Maybe. If they get...
Well, that game won't be at 6:30. No. That'll be an 11 o'clock kick, I would guess.
Depending on how good Iowa is at the time.
Well, my fear now is that Iowa State basketball will be playing during that time in Florida.
Will you be covering that personally?
Maybe.
Since Stansbury down there.
Well, no, I don't. That's a whole other deal. Not Stansbury, but how that's going to go down. I don't know yet. I don't know what the schedule is going to look like in November. Yeah, I can't wait for that game, man. That's going to be freaking awesome.
So much bad blood.
Those two teams hate each other.
So much bad blood.
I mean, it's nearing like, it's not there, but it's nearing like SEC levels.
Mm-hmm.
Except much smaller fan bases because they're private schools. But, yeah, like, the hatred between Briles and Patterson is epic.
Yes. Like, I was listening to the new 1350 that's up in ESPN Radio. It's
okay.
In Des Moines.
Yep.
I can't listen to Rich Eisen. I can't do it.
I don't blame you. I don't
it's
like Rich
so
Eisen.
It's so boring. So during the time before Murph and Andy, between like 1 and 2,
yeah,
I was listening to Cannell and Russillo.
Okay.
And they were talking about how they're like, Danny Cannell's like, you know, sometimes when you get a couple coaches and staff, like Jim Moore Jr. and Steve Sarkisian, like, they're rival schools. Like, UCLA and USC hate each other, but like, they're good buddies. Like, they're just laughing and chatting it up on stage. And he goes, and then we had Briles and Patterson in here, and like, the whole room was like icy. Like, you couldn't talk they just can't stand each other, and you can just get that feel when they're in the same room that they just hate each other.
Not only that, but then like, you look at their styles of football, couldn't be more polarly opposite either. Now Patterson has come around with the offensive stuff, obviously, the last few years. But, like, at the core...
He's a defensive coach.
Yeah, at the core, he's a defensive guy, and he probably hates the way that college football is now. Like, if it were up to him, they'd still be lining up with the power eye. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I mean, and frickin' Briles is, like, he's the one who started all this crap.
Yeah.
He and Leach. I mean...
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Well, when he was
in Houston. And Mark Mangino.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that...
Spreading stuff out.
Who's the Mount Rushmore of the spread in college football? Leach, for sure.
Leach is the guy.
Yeah, Briles is the one who really brought it to Texas high school football. I would put Mangino probably in there because he's a Leach guy. I mean, he's a Leach disciple.
Who else had spreads back in the day?
When did Oregon start it?
Oregon with Chip. Well, Chip got there. Wasn't he at Urban Meyer would be another one.
Herb was?
At Utah.
Was he doing that at Utah?
Mm-hmm. With Alex Smith.
Yeah.
At Utah. So Herb was running. So Urban Meyer, Mike Leach. You'd have to put Art Briles in the mix because of how he has revolutionized when the spread was a thing, has been out. And then
Chip Kelly?
Chip Kelly. Then that final Mount Rushmore spot would be Chip Kelly, Mark Mangino, or someone like, I think Malzahn hasn't been around for long enough, has he?
No.
No.
I mean, and he's basically piggybacking what already is out there. I'm talking like innovators here.
Well, right now, Malzahn's an innovator.
No, I get that, but like...
Like pioneers.
I'm talking, yeah, the pioneers. That's what I'm looking for here. Like the guys who... That's why I said Mangino, because when he was at Oklahoma.
Mangino. Yeah, I'd say Mangino when he had Jason White at Oklahoma.
Were they the first school to win a national championship doing that?
Probably.
In 2000.
Because when USC won with like Leiner and Palmer was after that, and they ran a pseudo spread, and Texas with...
yeah, I guess I don't think of the spread with those USC teams, but you're right, they were...
And Texas had Vince Young back in 2005.
Yeah.
And that was...
Was that Greg Davis?
I think it was Greg Davis. And they had... I'm not going to put Greg Davis on Mount Rushmore.
No.
But, yeah. No, I would say if we're going with a completely obscure, random topic of Mount Rushmore of spread offenses, Mike Leach is...
He's the guy.
He's George Washington.
Yeah.
Then...
I'd put Mangino next.
Mangino would be probably number two. Briles would be number three. And... Urban would be number three and Briles be number four of spread systems.
Yeah, and the reason like Briles, though, like he, if you know about his background, like he took this thing to like these crappy high schools in Texas. Like Stevensville High wasn't very good. Like they were like 1-10 or whatever. Briles institutes the spread that he's picked on with Mike Leach, you know, because he was a coordinator with Mike Leach. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize that. After his days at Stevensville. That was before he was the head coach at Houston.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he was doing that at the high school game in Texas.
Yeah.
And kind of changing the way Texas high school football, which that may not mean a lot to the people who are listening to this, but, I mean, what Texas high school football is doing directly impacts what you watch each and every Saturday across the country with the level of recruits that they have and the number of recruits.
The amount of people that play football in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, he changed the way they play football in Texas high schools.
Yeah.
So.
And I would put Gus in that same context.
What is his? I don't know his background.
He was a high school coach in Texas.
Was he really?
For
okay.
15, 20
so
years.
So maybe Malzahn and Briles are in the same.
Malzahn and Briles are in the same light. I think Gus got his start later than. Yeah. Did though. So if we're putting Mount Rushmore, if we're
like half and half,
Briles would get most of it, but honorable mention, I feel like it would be Gus Malzahn.
How is Auburn this bad?
Because Jeremy Johnson doesn't make the right. So they got a new starter.
Jeff, I had Jeremy Johnson as my Heisman.
That's a totally wrong decision.
Well, I realize that now. I don't need you to tell me that.
He wants to be Trevon Boykin, but doesn't make the right decision.
God, I watch. This is an amateur mistake on my part. But man, I watched his spring game. Did you watch the Auburn spring game?
Because I'm not that desperate to watch spring game competitions.
Well, it was. I didn't like watch the whole thing, but I had been tipped off. Like, oh my god, I had read some stuff. Like, you got to see this kid. So I wanted to see it for my own two eyes. I mean, and this kid was like a combo of like Cam Newton and Boykin. I mean, he
But
I was salivating. But
he makes such bad decisions
out there. He doesn't know what to do.
He treats every. I've talked about this before, but like he treats each play as he's still playing in junior college. And like when you're playing in JUCO, like you can just huck it up to whomever you want to, and just if your guys are better athletes, then you're gonna come down with it. And in practice, your guys look like better athletes all the time because you're going against a scout team. So like all you see is like your dude, your guy's going up to get it. So like even if a coach says like you have to check this down, you see cover five, they're gonna play two to this side. You can't throw a go on this side. You can't. This is a route to attempt to get rid of this play, and he'll still throw it there because he thinks that against scout team we'll throw it and he'll catch it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so he treats each game like a JUCO game. So it's not good decision making from Jeremy Johnson. So we'll see if Sean White, professional skateboarder, can correct anything. Wouldn't that be great if it was actually Sean White? Like, because he would have eligibility left, wouldn't he? Because skateboarding and snowboarding aren't skateboarders. They're not sanctioned sports.
Are they athletes?
Oh yeah, you got to have great balance to do that.
I think so too. But I think a lot of people would be like, oh, he's just riding on a. I think the snowboarding for sure.
Yeah, well, skateboarding too. Like you have to have fantastic balance for that.
Skateboarding's hard. It's one thing as a child that I could never really do.
I couldn't either. So no.
Did you rollerblader? I could see little Jeffrey in roller skates.
When I was like 8, I had Heelys. And we
what are
lived,
those?
The ones that have like wheels in the heel of the shoe.
Oh like, yeah, those were a big deal there for a while.
When I was like, well, I guess it was when I was in fourth grade. Between third and fourth grade, because we moved between third and fourth grade, and I had them when we moved.
I never had those.
And we had Heelys. My house had our driveway was probably about 70 yards long because we live out in the country, and there was this steep hill. Our driveway was an asphalt steep hill. And I remember trying to go down in my Heelys down that
the
steep
gravel?
Hill. No, it was asphalt.
Oh, okay.
And I remember trying to go down and just eating it and just rolling down the hill.
Did you scab up?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dad was laughing his butt off.
Well, that's good for you.
Yeah, don't do dumb stuff.
I was telling my wife this the other day. I mean, my daughter's 7 months old. And
just
we're trying to teach
to move
her.
Around?
Well, we're trying to teach her to sit up. She needs to be able to sit up by now. You know, like, come on.
She's got a Williams. Does she have a big dome because she's a Williams?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. She, I caught that, by the way. She, but she'll be doing it, and then she'll just face plant. But Ashley's like, doesn't want her to face plant. And my point is, no, you need to let her face plant 2 or 3 times, because then she's going to learn, well, I don't want to do that again. And she's going to keep up.
You
just got to let them. I mean, lessons. I'm not doing it on concrete here. I mean, it's like a padded floor. It's not hurting her. She doesn't.
You're going to put her on the middle of the street. Sit up. You're going to get hit by a car.
She doesn't cry. Like, it doesn't hurt her. Like, she's on fully, like, padded surface here. But it's like, teach her to sit up. Like, she can learn this on her freaking own.
She's got a brain in
just
there.
Just like you. I mean, did you go...
I did not go in my Heelys down that hill again. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah.
I didn't even wear them after that.
There you go. Parenting 101 today here on the Iowa Clinic Men's Center podcast. Jeff Woody, we got to go, man.
And I don't have a child, so...
I got to go interview Dan McCarney.
That's a great statement right there.
Yep.
I have to go interview Dan McCarney.
I got to get there. I got to leave now to make it in time. So we appreciate your time today, as always.
As always.
You enjoy your bye week?
I will. I have a high school game on Friday. Doing Roosevelt hosting Sioux City East.
Ooh.
Which
that sounds like a doozy.
The teams may not be as successful as the
Why
other
are they
teams
putting
done,
that game on?
But it's going to be close. Like the two games that I've done so far have been like 38-16 and like
most
24-0. Like I'm just hoping for
you guys
a close
didn't
game.
Do Valley Dowling?
No, well I didn't.
Oh,
I do
okay.
Every other week.
Gotcha. Why? Who else is doing
Coach Datto?
Who?
Coach Datto. Kurt Datto. He's been doing it for 15 years for MediaCom, and he like decided that he was done, and so they picked me up to do it because I want to get into color broadcasting, and then he decided he wanted to do it again, and they didn't have the heart to tell him no.
Oh, okay.
So they gave me
that
every
sucks.
Other week, which is...
It's not bad, actually. It gives you
not
some
terrible.
Free time.
Gives me a Friday off every once in
a
while.
Trust me, Bloom's going through that. He's been doing the Channel 5 stuff for probably 5 years now, and he has his Fridays off, and we just sit and watch college games on Friday nights, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really the only time during the week that I have off, Friday nights.
which is it's crazy. Just how you fall is, we have a sign in our house. It's like, you know, one of those like wooden signs that you get at like a craft shop. It says, we interrupt this football or interrupt this marriage to bring you football season.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, because then Saturdays are like the busiest day of the week, the longest day of the week.
And then Sundays are like recovering from that.
Well, that and, I mean, there's so much happening on Sundays. Like, you know, point spread's coming out. I have to get Monday Musings ready. Like it.
And then you have to be a person. So you have to like mow the lawn and clean the house.
That's the biggest problem I have, is finding time to mow and do stuff like that.
So that's usually Sundays for my wife and I.
Yeah.
Which is...
See, my wife works a lot of Sundays. It's tough to do that stuff with a 7-month-old.
Just strap her to
We have a lot of daddy-daughter time, though, so that's
fun. Strap her to your chest like Carlos in The Hangover and just do everything.
We do a lot of fishing. Me and her and Dirks, we go and it's fun. She enjoys that.
Good. Yeah. She like Dirks? Does Dirks like her?
Oh, yeah. They're mutually best friends.
Oh.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Dude, you're lucky Dirks didn't try to mount you when you got here.
He would have been kicked if he tried to.
Good. I mean, a little tough one.
Again, hard lessons, man.
Hard life.
You try and hump my leg, you're going to get tossed across the room.
And that's a perfect comment to end on. Thanks for listening today, everybody. Have a great rest of your week.